Welcome to Day Zero Update for May 12th, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
Well, you are Brandon Perkins.
Yeah.
It's just the two of us this week.
Yeah.
It seems like it is Mother's Day as well, so that probably is why. Busy doing family stuff, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we've got plenty to talk about. This is the week where, let's say, one of the major platform holders essentially ended everybody's enthusiasm about their general plan for development in general, which is a hell of a thing you can do. Mm. We also have Nintendo getting people excited about the possibility of a new Switch successor getting announced in the next 10 months at this point, along with some other stuff going on. And yeah, we got Remedy having some development news, unfortunate. We got news that happened out of Helldivers 2 that we expected to happen before I could even get the podcast up. That sort of stuff. And yeah, some more stuff going on here. But before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I'll kick it off here. I got Hades 2 on Steam, the early access, which is very good so far. I have not beaten Hades, so primarily what I got out of that is I should play more Hades, because I think you've gone through the story mode a bunch of times in Hades to get all the story stuff.
Yep.
Is his, like, long-lost sister talked about at all in that?
If they do, it's off to the side and very briefly.
Okay, because the stars, oh, I forget what her name is.
Melanoe.
Yeah. She is Zagreus's sister, sort of not known by much of the family, if at all.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, if you play that, one of the senses you'll get about playing that game is that the Pantheon in general is just one big screwed up family. So, yeah. Them not knowing about her is very much in character.
Yeah, so the family is gone. She is searching for them. As I guess she has learned about them.
Mm-hmm.
But she is under the tutelage of a witch named, I forget what her name is as well.
It's Hecate, who is the goddess of sorcery.
Yeah, so she is a master witch that has taught our girl, Melanie, all that she knows, and she is the first boss in the world here. Whereas in Hades, it was Meg and her sisters that you would get randomly, depending on how the things went. Here you kind of get your master as like a test thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess a lot of people are having trouble with that, but I don't think I've lost to her really. But that's kind of the story beat, is you're kind of outside of the general family of the Hades family, I guess. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that makes for an interesting story here, as she is interacting with some of these Greek gods. A few return from the original game, you know, Zeus and Apollo. I think Poseidon and a handful of the others, but you also get some new ones that are pretty cool, that do their own things. But yeah, it's got a lot of that stuff. Gameplay wise, some of the new things here is that there are a lot of trees around in these areas, and when you bust it sends a shard of like splinters in the direction you're attacking, so you can finish off enemies with that kind of thing. And I assume you get some bonuses for that, bonus damage, that kind of stuff. So that's kind of cool. The first area is kind of it's kind of a foresty area. And then I've gotten to the second area, which is, it's an underwater area. I think it's called Oceania. A lot of steam pipes, a lot of like shark and fish kind of enemies to it. Mm. That's been the one where I've been losing a lot in. So that's been the fun part, getting to the harder stuff there, though I haven't put too much time beyond the stream I did of this. So, because I was like, I should get back to Hades, because I haven't even beaten that, gotten farther into that. That one I keep getting tripped up in Elysium, the third of the worlds. So, but yeah, they've made a game that looks better. They've upgraded their art here, even if you didn't think that was possible. They made some really cool characters. You have, you know, your base that is not like a structured building like in Hades, but you have this sort of base area that kind of unlocks more stuff to do in it as you go. And your weapon upgrades are handled a bit differently as you have these. Right now I'm in the business of unlocking the weapons. So they're all different weapons as far as I've seen. You start off with like a staff that you can stab people with and also shoot some stuff out. I got, I think, dual blades. There's the second one. I forget what the third one is, but they've also introduced the idea of tools. So initially you get like a pickaxe that lets you mine silver. You see these rocks with silver on it so that you can mine some of that on there. And then there are, I got another tool that lets me like do something with some spirits to get some other currency. So they have like specific tools for specific things. But you can only take one with you. So you're kind of having to focus on where you want to go with what you're trying to get, which, you know, was a thing in the original, but you kind of just, that was more only in the doors you picked versus them being elements of areas you could interact with or not interact with. So that was an interesting bit. So there's also the cards that you get that are sort of different perks you can mash together and use a specific currency to upgrade the amounts of that you can hold. They're all scored like 1, 2, 3, I think I've seen so far. So you're kind of dealing with that stuff. And it shows you a 3x3 grid where it's like, oh, this is not that much. And then as you get to the edges, it opens up another row or column, that kind of thing. So that's how you get more. And then they start requiring more than the, I think that's ash that needs for that one. I forget what it's called. There's a bunch of new currency here, so I don't have a grasp on all the names for everything, but you start requiring more things out of that to get the other cards. So they, you know, just add a lot of different bonuses, better health stuff, all that kind of stuff. So, and that's a lot there, a lot of good story stuff. They do have auto advance for dialogue, so you don't necessarily have to sit there and hit the button all the time. But I kind of wish it was a little more, a little shorter in the in the time it takes between advances. It seems like it's like 4 or 5 seconds versus like 2 seconds I would want. So it kind of makes it feel a little stilted in the dialogue. But yeah, this is early access, so that stuff can be adjusted. But yeah, I think it still has the god mode in there, so if you want to just make progress and not have to test your skills constantly, you can do that. As well as a lot of the same options that are in the original game. I think the auto advance is like the main difference with Hades. So that's some nice stuff there. So yeah, that's Hades 2. It's out on Steam right now, and I think Epic Game Store for $30. And yeah, that seems like they have really nailed it here, because I believe they sold more or had more people playing this initially than ever on Hades. And that's probably because Hades was not a slow burn, but it was like an even burn versus like people jumping in right away, because their games have always been very good, but not necessarily like huge sellers or anything. But this one has people excited for it. Yeah, looking at Steam, it's the number one game on Steam. Although the top item is the Steam Deck, so that technically doesn't count on that. But yeah, Hades hugely popular right now. People are playing it, checking it out. And there's also the group of people that are like, I want to wait till 1.0. And it's like, yeah, definitely get that.
Totally fine. Mostly because then I'll be able to play it on console.
Yeah.
Because tell you truth, I cannot play this game on my computer.
But yeah, it's really well done, really nice. Mm-hmm. Great art style. You got a little pet frog you can pet every time you get back, so it's not the Cerberus, but the frog, you know, ribbits and all that, so that's fun. Yeah, really good. Definitely worth checking out. You can already get the soundtrack if you want, because it's already really good stuff. And I was thinking, I forget who the soundtrack person on these games, on the Supergiant games, has been. He does another voice. He does another skeleton voice, you know, a Joy-Z accent voice for a skeleton dude that you get to wail on and destroy if you want. So, yeah, there's a lot to this game. Apparently it has about as much, if not more, content in this early access than the original game has. So if you're wondering if it's going to be a shorter experience, probably not, but depends if you want to jump in now. But yeah, these tend to be slow burns for me, so I'm fine with that. And yeah, as I said, also been playing Hades, trying to get back into this. And I don't know that I like it on a Steam Deck. It's a game with a lot of detail, and the Steam Deck is a smaller screen that makes it a little harder to see things. Mm-hmm. It's a bad way to play, but I think I like having that on a bigger screen, like my monitor and my TV for that. So I'll probably keep playing it more on my monitor here versus Steam Deck. So that's still been going. And I've been upgrading my weapons, because that was the thing I didn't realize I could do. Use that Titan Blood to upgrade aspects of your weapons or evolve their abilities, that kind of stuff. So that's where I'm at right now. It's like a lot of like getting nectar and figuring out who to give it to get more of the they're not perks or the I don't know, pendants, whatever they're calling in the cabinets. There's one of those in Hades too. I haven't unlocked it yet, so I'm still working my way through that stuff. But yeah, those games are very good. Looking forward to play some more of Hades and Hades 2. So there's that. Also been playing Animal Well. The new game from, or the first game from a solo dev. I forget what his name is. It's basically a puzzle Metroid style game where you come into this world and you are exploring around, finding stuff. Billy Basso is the developer on this. It's got a very cool, like, ethereal kind of art style to it. As this mysterious kind of lump creature that is exploring these environments, and you're kind of looking around, seeing what things you can do, what things you can interact with, and you can kind of interact with a lot. You'll see like vines hanging down from the ceiling or whatever.
Yeah.
And you can jump into those and move them around. You can do that with hanging lights, all that kind of stuff. That is pretty neat. And yeah, you're kind of going to these rooms, like seeing like, oh, here's like a little platform challenge with switches. So you jump up on the ones you can to get the next switch. Then you go back to another switch and you're like, oh, there's a chest here. I should go get that. And the main collectible I've seen are these eggs that belong to a peacock. And there's a specific room to go look at all the eggs. And I think you get bonuses for doing that. I don't know if they're gameplay bonuses or just maybe cosmetic stuff. I don't know, but you're going around, not really too much in the way of enemies in this. There's the ones I've seen are these dogs that you're kind of going to tunnels underneath where they're at. You're trying to trick it to get away from one area, and they can grab you out of the air if they get you, and they can do damage to you. But this game's pretty easy on the damage stuff. You mostly take damage from that kind of stuff, but if you fall into water, you don't take any damage. You just respawn where you last touched on ground. So there's some neat little things about that kind of stuff. Yeah, as herons I was dealing with that were pecking at the water, and if you're nearby, they'll start pecking at you. So you're kind of trying to make your specific jumps and that kind of stuff to get out of there, get out of their way and get through. So yeah, it plays around with a lot of that kind of stuff. And yeah, I would say like kind of like Fez meets you know, an exploration focused Metroid kind of game. So you got a lot of puzzles and stuff that you may not think of as puzzles, but you'll see like walls that are blocked off that you have to hit switches and you figure out how to get around and get them, as well as a lot of or have new items like you find firecrackers, which you use to take out ghosts that start chasing you, and also just lighting up some of these areas because some of them are dark.
Mm-hmm.
You get a map at a certain point, which if you're in a really dark room, you can't use, so you might have to get into some light to use it. What else have I gotten? I've gotten a bubble wand, so there's areas where these fish are shooting out bubbles into the air, and that's a way that you can kind of get around these across some gaps and stuff like that, and use it to get up higher onto ledges and that kind of stuff. So that's like a neat little mechanic they add to the game.
Mm-hmm.
For that, as well as now I have a frisbee that you steal from a dog spirit that chases you until you put it back. But let's say you get one that's a fake version of that you trick it with. So you get to keep the frisbee, which allows you to do things like hitting switches from a distance, or if you manage to hop on it, you can just get across gaps that way. So it's got a lot of interesting uses, and yeah, this is the kind of game that's full of that kind of stuff. Ways to get around to places you didn't think you could, to find secrets that you might not notice in some of these areas, all that kind of stuff that, is really, really well done.
Yeah.
Very good game. Looking forward to putting some more time into that. Yeah, it's got nice spooky vibes and all that to it.
Yeah.
Nothing too scary that I've seen. It's just like, oh, here's this dog spirit that's chasing you. It's kind of freaky, and you know, various other creatures you see around that are doing some weird stuff. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's Auto or Animal Well. That's on PlayStation, Switch, and PC.
Mm-hmm.
So that's worth checking out. It's also on PlayStation Plus Extra and Premium. So if you have those, you can check that out. Fun thing is the dog thing. You start like, oh, I'm safe in these tunnels, and then they throw a dachshund at you. Then it goes right into the tunnels. You're like, fuck.
Mm.
So yeah, they play around with that kind of shit. So yeah, that's a Animal Well. Very cool. Mm. I think it's $25 if you want to buy it outright. It's going to have a 10% discount for launch. So there you go for that. And the last game I've been putting some time into is Little Kitty Big City.
Mm-hmm.
I've not put a ton of time into this, like an hour or so. But it's a game where you're playing as a cat who is in this Japanese town, or Japanese city, I guess,
mm-hmm.
where you're just napping and enjoying and rolling over, and then you accidentally roll off the ledge of the window. And, you know, in cartoon style, you kind of grab onto a bird and some other stuff to kind of soften the landing as you land down below. And realize, like, well, shit, I am super far away from my home. Well, what can I do? And you go talking to animals around. Like the initial one you find is a crow.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of gives you some instructions on what to do, as well as you find, you know, a variety of animals. I've seen a tanuki, since this is Japan.
Mm-hmm.
A couple other cats. Yeah, the crow. What else have I talked to? I think that's it so far. But yeah, you kind of get quests from them. You can work on that stuff. I had a cat that was called the Mayor with a bunch of R's for purring. I was like, I need to take a nap. So what I need you to do is to knock these jars of jam off these high shelves, because I like the sound of shit being broken. So that's a, you know, an asshole cat. So you go do that. The human that's running the store, not happy. If it catches you, it picks you up, and she like takes you out of the store to get you out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing really too complicated there, but a lot of the other stuff is like, hey, they got ongoing quests that you have for like breaking a bunch of stuff, so you can got some platforming to it. It's a little bit tricky because you can jump, but also if you hold A, you can pull out like an aiming sort of you know, aiming for jumping to higher jumps, that kind of stuff. So you're trying to get it up onto the edges of some of these walls or whatever you're trying to jump onto. It can be tricky at times. Like, it doesn't want to work like the way it should. I would say there's a little bit of roughness around that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had times where I had to like move the cat in random directions to see when I can get it to kind of bug out into the way it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, if you just land on the side of the wall with that cursor, it doesn't work out. Your cat just kind of hangs on it and sort of slides down slowly, and you can jump off of that almost like a wall jump. But as far as I see, nothing really requires anything like that. But you can climb up on the walls and knock over pots and other stuff like that, like jars and other things you find. Probably the first achievement you're going to get is one for knocking over 10 things.
Mm-hmm.
From that, so use the triggers for that to knock over, you know, knocking over left or right. So yeah, you're kind of exploring the city, kind of meeting new creatures, hanging out, doing stuff. Nothing really too time pressure-y to this, so it's a very chill game so far. Mm-hmm. The cat does not like water, so if you run across puddles or covering up your path you're trying to go to, then you'll have to look around, see if there's, you know, boxes you can climb up on and get up onto the wall to get around it, or there's little holes in the bottom of some of these walls that you can crouch and get under there. Mm-hmm. But sometimes there are boxes on the other side, so you probably have to find a way to get around and knock those out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
What else? You can pick stuff up to carry around. Usually nothing really requires that, but you do get to a point where you need to get shinies, which are just little trinkets that you can find as a, not really a currency, because I think it's just a thing you get from quest for, I think the crow wants it, mm-hmm. or he's going to give you something you need. But yeah, there's collectibles for like the hats you can put on. I've got like one for, I think, a strawberry, an apple. I think I might have a banana, a bunch of different fruits. But also they have some fun bits, like the cat runs across a dog. Dog's constantly barking, so your cat freaks out on that. And also cucumbers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a fun little thing that people found out cats don't like, so they built that into there. Though once you get scared by it, you can pick it up. So you kind of get over it. Though I think when I dropped it, again, the cat freaked out again. So there's a little weirdness to that. But it's real fun to kind of get up onto ledges and then climb up onto the tops of some of these buildings.
Because
mm-hmm. There usually be stuff up there to do or other ways to get around levels. So you can have some fun stuff like that going on. But yeah, this also has auto advance, which none of the characters talk, but they do have, you know, text bubbles as they're kind of talking to each other. The auto advance kind of sucks for this because as soon as you hit the button to show all the text, it'll pretty quickly skip to the next, you know, talk bubble. Mm-hmm. So if you're just trying to show what's there and then where you normally assume like, oh, to wait a few seconds and then go, it'll go much faster than you think. So it extremely discourages you from trying to button through text if you care about trying to read what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, otherwise that might be good for people that just don't care what the talky bits are doing here. But I think that gives your characters a little more character to it.
Mm-hmm.
As one of the characters I met was a chameleon that did not have its camouflage working.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, well, you got weird eyes, cat. And your character's like, weird eyes? What are you talking about? It's like, well, first off, they're not sticking out of your head, and then they're not on the sides of your head. So I don't know what your head's... You got more empty space that your brain could be taken up. And then he's got like a little magician's hat on because he's a, you know, a chameleon. So he's like, well, I'll give you a hint where I'm going to be next. And it'll be under camouflage, supposedly, that you'll find. So that's like another little collectible thing you can find, I assume. So, but yeah, that's on Game Pass on Xbox, but it's also on Switch and PC, I believe. No PlayStation version yet, but that's been pretty much it for what I've been playing. So, Brandon, how have you been doing?
Well, I've been good. And as for me, my gaming has largely centered around, well, first off, I am still playing Fear and Hunger Termina. And I don't really have much to say about that right now because I'm still kind of working my way through it with a different character. The only advice I would give is the same advice I gave when we did Let's Weekend last night, which is if you are ever at a point where you are going up against something new or you going into an area you don't know what you're going up against, and keep in mind, this is a type of game that can easily like ruin your day if you're not, careful, because it can be very unpredictable that way. If you're in that situation and there is a save point close by, or you have some way to go ahead and save your game, and it's like it might be a slight distance away or whatever, don't second guess yourself. Go and do it, because this is a game that it's really easy to accidentally sort of box yourself in, depending on what the situation is, because a lot of things in this game can be randomized, especially the items that come in. Because much like with the first game, most of the items that you come across in this game are randomized depending on their location. So, don't second guess yourself. Go ahead and do the save if you need to. But other than that, I got myself a copy and am currently still playing Stellar Blade, which is the first console game by Shift Up, the makers of Goddess of Victory Nikkei, one of the most popular gacha games on iPhones right now. And that first and foremost, I did play the demo, and I, before I got it, and like I've said in the past, the demo is good, was really good. I was very impressed by it. It was a lot deeper and a lot more involved than I thought it was going to be. Gameplay wise, it is not like Nier Automata, which is its most obvious inspiration. It's a bit closer to Sekiro as far as like the combat goes, but it's a lot more action oriented instead of, whereas Sekiro, you're trying to whittle down a person's defenses to get that perfect, stab. Here you are just whittling down like a health bar, but if you can knock them off balance, you can hurt them a lot easier. And also, like with Sekiro, you should never take any of the enemies, even the minor ones, without taking them seriously, because even the minor ones can basically mess you up pretty badly if you're not careful. Also, they tend to come in packs, so you need to find out how you can pick them off one by one. And also, the game does have a system that's somewhat similar to like the bonfire system from a lot of those games, in that there's an area you can go where you can like recharge your health, recharge the health items that you need, and also save your game. And it also like respawns all the enemies in a given area. And it also acts as like a fast travel point. But other than that, its overall like aesthetic is a lot closer, obviously, to Nier Automata. Although I will say straight up that as far as like the writing goes, Nier Automata is far better written. That's not to say that this game is somehow bad, or that it's not engaging as far as the plot goes. Like, it's kind of run of the mill, but it's still pretty exciting. It's just Nier Automata is a treasure, and it is very hard to be able to do a game like that and knock it out of the park the way that Yoko Taro did. But I, that's another tangent. But yeah, so also, what impressed me is the fact that the gameplay is a lot more varied. It's not all just that, the combat stuff. Obviously, you've got your traversal, the platforming and all that stuff. But you've also got things where like the game will kind of throw you a curveball. For example, there are certain areas where you will not have access to your sword because your sword is controlled by like electrokinesis or something like that. So there's like a radio wave or something that prevents you from grabbing a hold of it. So you're basically reduced to only being able to use your projectile weapon. And your projectile weapon has ammo. And for all sense and purpose, there are whole parts of the game where it straight up just becomes a survival horror game, where you have to be able to conserve ammo, you know, pick your shots and be able to take down these enemies, you know, without having access to your regular melee weapon. And the thing is, on top of that, there are enemies that will like explode if you attack them. They can take out a pretty nasty chunk of your life out if they manage to hit you successfully. So yeah, game is surprising in a lot of ways. The one thing that this game inadvertently has become most infamous for is the fan service. And I will say it's not as egregious as some of the marketing makes it out to be. She does have, Eve, the character you play, she does have plenty of outfits that are, you know, rather risque in nature, but she also has just as many that are like normal and fashionable. That said, though, there are also some outfits that's just like, why? You know, what's the purpose? Like, it's not that I'm against that kind of thing in a game, you know, far from it. It's just, it's kind of jarring when you're exposed to it. But that's what I've been playing.
All right, let's get to some news.
Mm-hmm.
And first up here, Marathon games have been long kind of not really all that playable on modern PCs.
Mm-hmm.
And because they were made for Apples back in the day.
Yeah, they were made for Macs.
So.
In fact, back in the day, if you owned a Mac, Marathon was more or less like the only game in town if you wanted a first-person shooter, at least for a while.
So those games, revered by Bungie, like old Bungie fans, mm-hmm. From the 90s, that, you know, was kind of surprising when they went to make Halo, and it was more of an RTS, and then once Microsoft kind of acquired Bungie to get Halo, they kind of turned it into a first-person shooter, and, you know, it's history, but Marathon was kind of their precursor to that kind of stuff.
The Marathon trilogy in general is, when you consider the time period it came out in, it's very ahead of its time in a lot of ways. For one thing, it was one of the like first games that I know of, especially if a first-person shooter that uses the whole like apocalypse log system, where like you go up to these terminals and you'll like get bits and pieces of the story as you go along. Later there would be other games that would start doing that. System Shock and stuff like that. But Marathon was one of the first games to do that.
Yeah. And the trilogy is coming to PC and Steam now,
mm-hmm.
as being done by, let me see what the studio is called here. That is doing, it's like LF1, that have been trying to do an open source continuation of the original Marathon trilogy,
mm-hmm.
that Bungie has given their blessing to. And mm-hmm. now those games are releasing on Steam, with the first one being available now as Classic Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they're all going to be free. The first one's out now, and the other two will be releasing in the near future.
Mm.
I don't know that they have specific time frames for those, but on Steam, at least you can wishlist those, so you get notified when they're available. With Marathon 2 and Marathon of Infinity, so you can finally check out some very classic PC first-person shooter action. See how things looked after Doom,
mm-hmm.
Where Bungie was kind of doing some cool stuff of their own.
Oh, yeah. Bungie was like, it's funny when you look at Bungie, like, between Marathon and Halo, just sort of like the different things that they tried. Because like on the one hand, you know, they put out the was it an, I'm pretty sure they put out like an RTS series. Let me see. I need to look this up because.
Yeah, I forget what that's called.
Yeah, I know it's like Myth something. Hold on, let me see. I need to look this up because yeah. It's yeah, Myth, the Fallen Lords in Myth 2 Soul Blighter. And then like yeah. And then they had that other game Oni, which was like very clearly supposed to be heavily inspired by Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, published by Rockstar, the combo you always expected to happen.
Yeah. And that game was kind of divisive, because they went kind of minimalistic on the environmental graphics and the AI wasn't that good.
Yeah, I think the controls are a bit weird, especially on console.
Yeah, that game came out at a time period when, honestly, a lot of developers were still trying to figure out how you're supposed to, like, do an action-adventure game in 3D. So, yeah, like, this is like the, like, late Tomb Raider generation where, you know, they had to map everything to a button somehow. Yeah. But, you know, over the years, I think that game's kind of gotten a cult following. And honestly, yeah. I'd be more than okay if Bungie decided to go back to that well sometime, because I think there's a lot of ways they could, some bunch of different ways they could take that game. But yeah, that game and Halo came out basically like the same year. And obviously Halo ended up taking off.
Yeah. Yeah. So they got that. They do also have the new Marathon game.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be more of an extraction shooter, I guess, but
yeah.
We haven't really seen enough to really know.
Yeah.
What that is, but that seems to still be a ways off.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there you go. Marathon. You can check it out on PC. Mm-hmm. Probably pretty friendly to play on any modern PC.
Yeah, it's those games are very budget friendly, let's put it that way. especially for modern PC. So yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go for that. Next up here, the Rogue Prince of Persia has been delayed, mm-hmm. Because of Hades 2's quick release on Steam, as mm-hmm. that kind of caught everybody by surprise. I think people knew they were going to be releasing it pretty soon, the early access version of that. And the Rogue Prince of Persia is also supposed to be releasing in early access. I believe it was supposed to be out this Tuesday here on May 14th.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, shit, we might as well delay it a bit here. Mm-hmm. They're going to take all the air for a while.
Mm.
And so smartly, they've pushed it to later in May. I don't think they have a date yet. I think they're going to wait a bit and see how that goes, and then that announce a new date for that. But yeah, that seems like a smart thing to do here, as I think the Rogue Prince of Persia seems like it's going to be a pretty neat game to see mm-hmm. in action, but no point in walking into a buzzsaw by being immediately compared to Hades 2.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're going to...
Nope, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. You're like, oh, well, that's great. We'll mm-hmm. just wait a bit.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if it comes out in June.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, even almost a week later, it's still the number one game on Steam, so they might be forced out if they are hoping to get their own slice of the pie there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you'll have to wait on that. So I think it's only on PC for the time being, so
mm-hmm.
much like Hades 2, you have to wait for a bit for console release. But yeah, speaking of consoles, Nintendo had some news this week.
Yep.
They announced they're going to have a Direct here in June. To probably talk about what else they got coming for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And they made sure in their tweets about this that there's going to be no news of the next Switch, as they call here Nintendo Switch Next Model.
Yeah.
Something like that. But yeah, they put the tweet here. I'm going to read it real quick. This is Furukawa, president of Nintendo, We will make an announcement about the successor to Nintendo Switch within this fiscal year. It will have been over 9 years since we announced the existence of Nintendo Switch back in March 2015, which I think they were just calling it NX at that point. We will be holding a Nintendo Direct this June regarding the Nintendo Switch software lineup for the latter half of 2024. Mm-hmm. But please be aware that there will be no mention of the Nintendo Switch successor during that presentation. So saying, stop, don't jump into this expecting the next thing to be announced. But do look forward to the thing in June. And of course, they don't give us a date because that would be too much. But I assume it'll be right around the other Summer Game Fest showcases. So we'll see that here probably in early June. But yeah, as for some negative Switch news, they are removing the ability to upload your screenshots and videos to Twitter. As you know, the changes they made to the API make that a very expensive and untenable kind of feature to continue support. I think Sony and Microsoft removed that feature last year. Nintendo's kept it on for a bit, but now we know that it will be going away on June 10th. It'll no longer be able to be possible to post screenshots and videos to X, or formerly Twitter, from the Nintendo Switch album, or send friend requests to social media users via the friend suggestion feature. I think the other method that they have is it's a really weird like remote connection thing that you do. That is a just a very weird way to do it, but yeah, that's the direct way through Twitter. It's not going to work anymore, so they'll be the last console taking that away, and then no longer will Twitter have one of the coolest features that consoles have had for the last like 10 years. And that's just very annoying. Thank you, Elon.
Yeah.
They had their gaming account, the X gaming account, be like, oh, we're still working with Nintendo and all this, and it's like, yeah, shut up. So yeah, and then Nintendo also announced a new game that'll be coming out July 18th. Nintendo World Championships NES Edition. This is sort of a speedrun challenge game.
Yeah, and it's based on like this notoriously rare Nintendo cartridge that was specifically produced for a competition back in, I think it was some point in the late 80s.
Yeah.
It's like so rare that it's in like it sells. If you get a copy of it, it sells in like the hundreds of dollars. It's
I think more like hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars.
Oh yeah, it's really rare.
I believe there were gold versions of that cartridge as well as the classic silver. And they are doing a physical edition of this, but the digital edition is $30. The special edition is $60. Includes. Art cards, yeah, a version of that golden NES cartridge. I don't think it's an actual copy of it, and a physical game card for that, as well as a bigger box and all that for that. But yeah, this includes 13 games broken up into various sections to speedrun, and includes like leaderboards for it. That's a pretty neat idea, like actual online leaderboards and all that, which is like, this is neat, but it really also needs to have the full game in it. As far as I know, it's not. It has 13 games to it. Let's see if I can get a list of them, because I don't think it's that many. That huge of a surprise what games are in there. Yeah, here it is. The one on Nintendo.com. That has the whole list. Balloon Fight, Donkey Kong, Excitebike, Ice Climber, Kid Icarus, Kirby's Adventure, Metroid, Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers 2 and 3, Super Mario Brothers, The Lost Levels, The Legend of Zelda, and Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link.
Yep.
I'm curious if what versions of these games there are, because that'll be interesting if they make any changes to this stuff, since they're kind of breaking it up into smaller chunks to do that for. So that could be interesting, but yeah, it's also set up in such a way that you can't just buy this and not need Nintendo Switch Online to play NES stuff. So you're kind of play needs more bite-sized chunks of these levels, as well as I think there's local races, so you can challenge your friends to see who can beat these sections fast, faster, like that. And that's neat, but I don't know how much appeal there is for that stuff. But yeah, it's a neat product. I might grab the digital edition and see how that is. But I imagine this reminds me of like the NES Remix stuff they did on the Wii U. That was like, that was neat. That seemed like it would have more quirky mixes of these games, but that never really panned out too much. Had a little bit of that, but it wasn't like as ridiculous as you would want. But yeah, this seems like a pretty neat product. But I don't think it's going to light the world on fire or anything. But yeah, you can check it out. It'll be out in about 3 months or 2 months from now. So you can check that out. You can also use the NES controllers that they made for the Switch, the weird ones that only charge by connecting to docking it onto the Switch itself. That are real weird to do. And also when you do that, it looks weird. Because they're not obviously not sized like the Switch, so it just looks like a monster version of the Switch. So there you go.
Yeah. Alrighty.
Yeah. Next up here, Raynatus. This is a game that you may not have heard of because it was announced as part of a Japanese version of a Direct in the past few months earlier this year. So this is an action RPG coming out of NIS America. Yeah, we got version confirmed for the Switch, or not the Switch, for the West, for the PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Switch, and PC. Looks really neat, has a nice style to it. They're also doing, weirdly enough, a crossover content with the Neo The World Ends With You, featuring characters, locations, and enemies from that game.
That's not that super surprising when you consider like the themes of both of those games. Also, the fact that the game's being written by Nojima, the same guy who wrote the scenario for Final Fantasy VII. So,
yeah. It's just an interesting game to pluck from, not like the original The World Ends With You, but the one that nobody played. Nobody even noticed it released, really. Because it came out alongside dozens of other games, but this one looks really neat for what it is. So that's going to be out September 27th in the West. So that'll be an early fall game. We'll see how that goes, but and next up here, Remedy. They are in the news because they have canceled Codename Kestrel. The cooperative multiplayer game, the one that they were making as a free-to-play game. And they said, well, fuck that. We'll make this premium. And now they've said, fuck making that. It was co-financed and co-published by Tencent, so it seems like they didn't seem to be turning out very well. So they've said they canceled it so they can focus on their other games that they're developing in its portfolio. Only that because of this cancellation, its other projects will get experienced developers reassigned from Kestrel. So the small team that's working on that are sort of going on to the other games to help them out. And as you say here, Codename Kestrel showed early promise, but the project was still in its early concept stage. Our other projects have advanced well and are moving to the next stages of development. An increasing focus on them provides us with benefits. We can reallocate talented Kestrel developers to these other game projects. Many of our support functions get additional focus on their operations. This is yet another means to ensure that our game projects continue advancing well. And so, Tencent kind of just goes away. Thank you for your money for a bit. But that's all. So, I believe they're also working on Control 2, the Max Payne 1 and 2 remake, as well as the, I don't think this was, there was a Control like multiplayer game. I don't think that was Codename Kestrel, but I could be wrong on that. But yeah, they have a few other things they're working on right now. So that's both those are going to be getting more of the focused.
Yeah.
Because yeah, they could use more time to work on the stuff that's probably going to hit better.
Mm-hmm.
Especially as the live service stuff kind of on iffy grounds if you're not fully invested on that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, speaking of live service games, Helldivers 2. Unsurprisingly, Sony walked back their policy they were requiring to have a PSN account to continue playing Helldivers 2 online, even if you're on PC. So that worked out exactly how we expected it to get walked back. So
yeah, the problem though is that apparently they are still having trouble like giving back access to people in a few countries. And apparently the CEO of Arrowhead actually like put out a statement, I think it was yesterday, basically like making it clear like, yeah, this was 100% on Sony. We had nothing to do with this. We are not pleased with how this has gone down, and we're trying to do everything we can to restore access to every area that we can. So yeah. Basically, Sony decided that, you know, they wanted to make all of the money, and they ended up shafting one of their biggest hits of the year in order to do it.
Yeah, because the game got delisted in, I think, countries that do not have direct PSN support.
Mm-hmm.
And that still has not been restored yet. Even though generally people in any country just make PSN accounts in whatever the nearest region they can deal with. A lot of people just do US because it's oftentimes cheaper there than where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a thing there. But that's going to be good to see more people be able to play that game.
Mm-hmm.
Though it sucks for the people that were in those regions that took the refund and now can't rebuy it again.
Mm-hmm.
Those people made a poor choice, I guess. But we'll see how many people rebuy it once they do get the opportunity to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's your Helldivers 2 news.
Mm.
But let's get to the bad news of the week. A couple bits here. Lightforge Games has laid off the vast majority of its staff and paused development.
Mm-hmm.
On their D&D inspired Project Orcs title that they were working on. This is a studio made up of mostly former Blizzard and Epic, mainly Fortnite developers. They're formed in 2020 as a remote only studio that had hired somewhere between 11 and 50 staff members with a goal to change how the world plays RPGs. That's a lofty goal, but seems like things have not gone down well. I don't know if this is in light of funding issues. It seems like funding issues. They said, after a lengthy period of regularly meeting with potential investors and game publishers, we were unable to secure the necessary funding to finish creating Project Orcs. And so they're making their call now to downsize to a skeleton crew. So that they can provide support to the wonderful team of devs, providing them with time to stabilize, working together to help folks as they re-enter the job market and finding new positions to continue their passion for making games. And there have been a number of smaller studios formed out of people that left or got laid off at Blizzard and Epic. This one was one of the ones that was still kind of not fully unveiled yet, but it seemed like a pretty interesting game if they could have gotten there. But it seems like, as we have known, the funding for these like smaller and mid-tier games is not really there at the moment. Not many of the bigger publishers are taking chances on that kind of stuff. And this ends up being another studio that suffers greatly for that.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go for that. And then the other one, the big news of the week, is that Microsoft has shut down three studios Mm-hmm. Tango Gameworks, Arcane Austin, and Alpha Dog Studios. Mm. And the studio known as Roundhouse Games is going to be absorbed into ZeniMax Online Studios, who is the part of the company working on The Elder Scrolls Online.
Yeah.
I believe that studio, Roundhouse Games, has been doing a lot of support work, so I guess that makes sense that they're going to keep them around. Also, fun fact, Roundhouse Games is the former Human Head studio that was working on Prey 2 at one point, when that was the thing, and then Bethesda got real mad at them
for
talking about that, and
at
a certain point essentially poached all of the people from that studio for their own studio, and then had them work on nothing.
Yeah.
Or as like support or whatever. I don't think they ever made anything really. They might have worked on the new Prey at some point, but yeah.
Which, for the record, the new Prey is actually, the newer Prey is actually really good. Just, it's not what, you know, in line with what the original Prey was and what the sequel was supposed to be.
Yeah. Sequel's supposed to be like a bounty hunter game.
Yeah, they
essentially like, what if the humans from Prey went into space and became cool dudes?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, that could be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And Bethesda's like, fuck off.
No.
We don't like cool games.
We don't like original. We want to make all the money.
Yeah, so, yeah, that studio still surviving.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever surviving is, but yeah, Tango Gameworks got shut down. Makers of Hi-Fi Rush, essentially probably the most celebrated Microsoft game to come out in the last year.
Yeah,
year it and was. Half, I think.
Mm-hmm. Because it was good. It had all. They basically released it with like no advertising or, you know, any type of campaign or whatever for it, and it sold like crazy.
It was shadow dropped after one of their developer directs, whatever they call them. But kind of a very different flavor of game coming out of Tango Gameworks, who worked on the Evil Within, those two games. It's like kind of Resident Evil-esque kind of thing that are pretty good games, but not really anything that's amazed anybody. But they let one of their other senior people work on or direct a game, and that is what came out, a very cool kind of action platformer kind of game that took everybody by surprise. Contended for some Game of the Year awards, and as a reward for that, they got shut down. Mainly because they were, what I'd read, mainly these studios got shut down because they were a bit between projects. They were essentially in the pitching phase of new projects. So Microsoft was looking to make some quick cash and freed up a bunch of salaries as a result, and kind of a very callous way that's, you know, has kind of really caused people to really turn on Microsoft now as much in the way of, you know, the sort of people that were very supportive of the Activision acquisition is like, oh, they're going to be a better place for those people, those studios. They're going to let them, you know, work on more things than just Call of Duty. And, you know, we haven't really seen any output of any of that because they've still been working on things that they were working on before Xbox acquired them. But Bethesda, like Hi-Fi Rush, I believe was still a thing that that studio was working on before they got acquired. So they still never really got to make a new thing. And yeah, Arcane Austin was still working on Redfall. We have a story here that they were working on an update to add on an offline mode to it, as well as I believe the two hero characters that they were working on. That was part of that $100 edition of the game that's never, those characters never came out. And obviously now they never will. So they have said that they're going to make, or they're promising make good offers, which I assume means they'll refund people part of the purchase for that. Whatever, $30-$40 for that, that would be the least they could do. Hell, I would say refund all of the money. Because you're Microsoft, you've got it. And obviously, as you're shutting down the devs, there can't be that many people that paid for that. But still, people were saying like, oh, this game's been out for a year and there's still this DLC still isn't out. You know, what the hell's going on? And obviously the devs were still working on things for that. So but yeah, as a result, they'll never get to finish any of that.
Yeah.
That game will never get the turnaround that people would hope for, you know, the way that Fallout 76 has gotten, you know, the Master Chief Collection got, they're trying to do with Forza Motorsport.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these games, Microsoft has had a lot of issues getting out in good states over the last 10 plus years. And willing to support that stuff. That's what they, Phil Spencer has been trying to make their reputation is like, you know, even if it doesn't come out perfect right away, we'll still keep working on it, keep going at it. And Redfall is very much the one game that started putting dents into this sort of attitude that they were trying to have, as it just came out in incredibly poor state. Phil Spencer had to go on, you know, the Kind of Funny podcast to try to be frank and honest about this. And they very much screamed of just, you know, we should have been better about this. We'll try to do that in the future. And it's like, oh, you probably should have done that well before instead of letting these studios kind of flail around until you put a foot down and they have to get the game out.
Yeah.
Because even with them kind of very much focusing on bugs with Starfield, so a lot of people have issues just with the general game design that doesn't hit as well anymore as like Fallout 4 did or Skyrim or any of that. It's like people have kind of worn down on that formula a bit, and they're finally adding things like maps of the cities instead of just wandering around aimlessly in those areas. You can better see like where things are at. But yeah, this has been the thing that's kind of cracked the facade of Phil Spencer's regime as the head of Xbox. That they've been so focused on, you know, this strategy with Game Pass of we're going to have a huge variety of games constantly coming out that'll keep you excited and, you know, trying different things as they go. And that's not really panned out at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like Hellblade 2 comes out here in a couple weeks and it'll be the first Microsoft game of 2024. And that's shouldn't be happening if they had their plan working well. But they've underestimated how long it takes to make these games, to make them, you know, make good games, to make the games that will hopefully keep people subscribed to Game Pass and all that. And that just hasn't worked out because obviously it's not super easy to just get a bunch of teams to get games out in, you know, one every 3 months kind of thing. That's not how development works. You could get it like Nintendo where they just seemingly just make a bunch of stuff and just sit on it for long stretches of time. That can be a thing, but obviously a Switch is an easier platform to do that on versus a Series X and a PC and Series S and all that on the Microsoft side. But yeah, this has kind of put a big dent in the development strategy, and the Activision acquisition probably came at a really bad time for this, as you know, as they were finalizing that whole thing, every other big publisher was looking at ways of cutting costs, and for Microsoft, dealing with a $70 billion acquisition seems to require more blood out of it to justify that, as they've put out statements effectively saying, these changes are grounded in prioritizing high-impact titles and further investing in Bethesda's portfolio of blockbuster games and beloved worlds which you have nurtured over many decades. Which seems to suggest we're going to focus on Elder Scrolls, on Fallout with these teams here. We'll see how this Indiana Jones game goes, because if that doesn't do well, maybe they'll be put into the Fallout mines or something. I forget what other ones. Yeah, there's Elder Scrolls Online. That's going to keep going on because that seems to do pretty well. There's Elder Scrolls 6 that they'll get to at some point. But yeah, it seems like the success of the Fallout show is probably a lot of higher-ups at Microsoft being like, so where the fuck is the new game to capitalize on this interest? You know, you've got the update of Fallout 4. But there should be a new game so we can make even more money. So we can sell $70 games to these people that are excited by the show. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're scrambling trying to find a team to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they'll finally go to Obsidian and say, make us something. You have 18 months again. If it doesn't hit this Metacritic, we'll cut you. We'll shut you down. No, I don't think they're that close to that. They've got other things. But yeah, this also throws a lot of fear onto how Hellblade 2 is going to do. Because that is a game people have been excited about, but it's not hit like a critical mass of hype to it, from what I've seen. People are probably more excited to check it out on Game Pass versus buying it on Steam.
Oh, yeah.
It's a $40 game. Not that that's bad or anything, but that signals to people the sort of scope of that game. And, okay, it's a $49 game, $50 game. So still a little bit of a less than full price kind of thing for that. But, yeah, they are certainly not really doing a ton of like big marketing for that game. And from the preview stuff I've heard about, it seems like it's very much more of what was in the original game, which I liked a lot, but I don't think that's necessarily what people are going to be expecting from the way this has been marketed and all that. The idea of taking what that original game was, which was a fairly small budget game. It was them trying to make a reasonably budgeted game with the tech that they could kind of come up with off the shelf. And that did very well for that. Now it's got the Microsoft throw all the money at it. And it's like, I don't know if that fares too well with what the way that original game was done. So we'll have to see how that goes. But yeah, people are fearful of Ninja Theory getting shut down. Like, what the heck's going on with Double Fine?
Yeah.
Not exactly a studio that has made huge sellers.
Yeah.
And they haven't made anything under the Xbox ownership. They finished up Psychonauts 2. That was already being made beforehand. So that's like a big concern people have. And it's like, what about, I'm trying to think, the South of Midnight devs, the ones that made the Bioshock S game. I forget what that studio is, but yeah, they got a few smaller studios there, and it's like, what are they going to be doing that's going to be justifying this focus on high impact titles and all that? And you got, you know, various sources of memos that have been put out and all this that have like Matt Booty talking about them needing smaller titles after they just shut down the studio that made the best smaller title that they've put out in the last few years. It feels like a lot of weird messaging of a publisher here that wants to be the big varied publisher they want to be, but the financial stuff that's going on in the industry right now has them also wanting to focus on the hits, hence why the showcase they've got coming up has a whole direct focus on Call of Duty, because that's their biggest game coming out the rest of this year, and they'll throw everything else into the showcase, and that's going to make that showcase very weird. It's like, how are you going to justify these studios being shut down with what you're going to show there?
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of weird stuff going on with Xbox now. There's a lot of cracks in their facade they've been putting out there for a while. I don't know if you have anything else to add, Brandon.
Nope. You pretty much stated it perfectly. This is just this is just how the industry is right now, and it sucks.
Man, Xbox is kind of having the long-term plan they've been talking about for probably 7-8 years at this point, that they've been starting to acquire more studios, kind of falling apart. This grand plan of having this perfect ensemble of studios that feeds into Game Pass and keeps new and interesting games coming out on it, you know, every quarter, that just still has not been panning out. And it's not like that isn't Phil Spencer's responsibility. Even when he became the head of Xbox back when Don Matrick left, who was the head of their first party studios? That was Phil Spencer. All of that mess of games they were working on for the Xbox One launch and the years after that, that was under the responsibility of Phil Spencer. And it's like, doesn't seem like this guy has all the answers. He's been able to curry a lot of favor with Satya Nadella, that he's been, I guess from what I've read, he's a huge fan of the cloud stuff, so that's why they've made a big focus on xCloud and all that, even though it hasn't really paid off in any way. So that's why you don't see them continuing to invest a ton into the those services, especially as it's still locked to the Game Pass Ultimate tier for people paying the most money. And yeah, that's kind of a thing that hasn't panned out as well, along with kind of Game Pass in general, because as we've seen with like Game Pass and PS Plus and all that, that most people aren't buying those or subscribing to those services because there's a ton of games they want to play. It's mostly because they're like, oh, I want to play this game. They'll play that. And if there's something else, they'll keep subscribing. But if not, they'll just let it lapse and then maybe come back later when something else is out. They're kind of just playing one game at a time. And not like the way some of us play where we're like, oh, that's cool. I'll play that. And then I'll play this. And I'll play this. And I'll play that. That'll be cool. And then, then that too. And, you know, being interested in all the indie stuff and the older stuff and all that. And it's like, no, these are the kind of people that if they wanted to play those, they would have bought them. And yeah, the subscription is kind of a more of a rental service in the way that they use it. A lot of people use it. And so that has led to a lot of stagnation in their growth of the revenue from Game Pass. It's like steadily going up like 1 or 2%, but with the infinite growth capitalism, they want that to be like 10%, 15%.
Yep.
It needs to be going up. And when that's not happening, they got to find that money elsewhere by shutting down studios and getting rid of office space if they can, you know, finding all the ways of cutting those things. So that's unfortunately where this kind of stuff leads to, is that's an easy way to get more money into the finances. And it's a way that really throws a wrench into the marketing of Xbox as like a studio friendly place to work at. And as we've seen, it's not. They're Microsoft. They're a $3 trillion company. They're not there to be nice to the people that work there if they're not making money for them. If they're just sitting around, they'll shut them down when they're looking to cut. And it seems like some of the word that's going out there is that this may not be the end of studios getting shut down. They might have some more to do over the summer. And that'll be, man, a sad time to see. Because it's not like they couldn't afford to keep everybody around.
Yeah.
They still seem to be generally making money. Making a profit. I think they had $20 billion profit last year.
Yep.
And like that. That's a shitload of money.
Yeah.
People even go on and the money they paid Bobby Kotick to get the fuck out of here. That could have kept Tango Gameworks and Arcane Austin going for like 17 years. But obviously that's not how that money works. When you're letting an exec like that go, they have to, they have stipulations for how much they have to be paid to get told to get the fuck out of there. And that for Kotick was a lot of money because he was a big shareholder of Activision, getting bought out essentially. But yeah, there you go. That's the that stuff. Sarah Bond happened to be on Bloomberg, one of their live shows. On their, I think it was Bloomberg Tech, was hosting this live show. She was on there, and she kind of didn't say anything when asked about this. She said, "Here, it's always extraordinarily hard when you have to make decisions like that. I'll go back to what I was saying about the industry, and when we look at those fundamental trends, we feel a deep responsibility to ensure that the games we make, the devices we build, the services that we offer are there through moments, even when the industry isn't growing, and when you're through a time of transition. And the news we announced earlier this week is an outcome of that and our commitment to make sure that the business is healthy for the long term." And it's like, that's not really saying anything. They're just saying, well, everybody else is doing it to make their businesses better. We are doing that too. She also says here, with that said, our commitment to having our own studios and working with partners to have games large and small, we're a platform you can play GTA, but you can also play Pal World, or you can play Call of Duty, or you can play Pentiment. That doesn't change. Frankly, our commitment to Bethesda and the role that it plays is a part of Xbox and everything we do. Then let's see, it's actually been pretty fantastic. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to check it out. The Fallout TV show was on Amazon. It's been great to see people fall in love with the universe.
Yeah.
But also what it's done for the games themselves and people going back and exploring everything inside of that. There are some other great things that are coming from our studios later this year. Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. I was a big indie fan growing up, so you should check that out. But really right now for us and our teams, our focus is on the people impacted and doing everything we can to do to help them through this hard transition. Which is, yeah, it's not a, it's not much she's saying about that. She's saying like, well, the Fallout show's doing really well, and so people are buying and playing those old Fallout games. So that's a thing that's going on. And we got Indiana Jones in a Great Circle. So that's also a Bethesda thing. So, you know, Bethesda's got a lot going on. And it's like, I guess, but you're also letting go, you know, the studio that's made one of the most interesting games Microsoft has made in this entire generation. And I feel like that says a lot, especially there, that being a Japanese studio, the one Japanese studio Xbox had, that kind of shows that their general talk about wanting to invest more in Japanese studios is only as far as what money it brings to them. So yeah, like Tango, that game didn't seem to do well enough, especially when they're looking to pitch something else. Maybe that wasn't the right pitch. I don't know, but seems like they just got caught in the crossfires of them needing some teams to cut when they needed some money, and they just happened to not be working on anything. I feel like that's a really good way to show that you don't care about what these teams do. Now, because I feel like making something like Hi-Fi Rush, that's done really well, that's that should ensure they get to make another game. But unfortunately, even with them releasing it on PlayStation, that it apparently did not do well enough to keep them around. I was even thinking to buy that while it was on sale last week, and when I saw the news, I was like, well, why the what's the point of even buying it now? All that money is not even going to keep that studio around. It's just going to fatten up the execs' wallets. I just play it on Game Pass if I'm going to keep playing it. So, yeah. Basically, what happened is capitalism happened. Happened. Infinite growth capitalism. That needs the money to keep going up and keep going up exponentially. And if it's not happening, they'll cut people. They'll lay people off. They'll shut down studios, whatever they need to keep that money coming in. Because that's all their salaries mean, is just money that's being wasted. If the games aren't hitting that well. So, yeah, that's going to make for an awkward showcase here in a few weeks. As I said, it's going to make it weird to put a shine of light on everything that they announced. Is like, was this worth shutting down three studios? You know, they're going to be investing into more mobile games. Alpha Dog Studios made Mighty Doom 4 phones. So that seems weird to do, but that's how much they wanted to shut down studios. They cut two of these studios that were working on things that would be in their interest and, you know, more Japanese games and more mobile games. And who cares about that? So, yeah. I don't know if you have anything else to add, Brandon.
Nope. That's just about it.
Yeah.
Nothing really to add. You pretty much put it perfectly.
Yeah, that's another bummer end of a week.
Yep.
Nothing even positive to add here. Certainly gotten a lot of people angry about Phil Spencer's role in Xbox. Is like, should he still be around? Has his tenure just been a large failure? Because he hasn't changed their role in the industry. Hasn't changed their place in the industry. They've only just spent a lot of money on acquiring various studios and publishers. And, you know, they've got a lot of Fallout money rolling in. They've got a lot of Call of Duty money rolling in, Blizzard money rolling in. But, you know, was that worth it for how much blood it cost for the studios they bought before that? I think a lot of people would say no. And it's like, how we're going to see if Xbox can resist just turning into Activision and focusing on Call of Duty so much. Conveniently, that's what the one half of their Summer Game Fest showcase is going to be about. So I think you got an early answer there on where things may go. And yeah, it's also like, well, is that going to be on Game Pass, the new Call of Duty? Because it seems like in their best interest, money-wise, to not do that.
Yeah.
Maybe next year put that game on there.
Yeah.
Like maybe a year later. And get the people that want to be in the zeitgeist right away, and then let the other people on there.
Yeah.
Like, we haven't even seen any other Activision games get added to Game Pass. We got Diablo 4, and that's it. So I assume that showcase will have some of that in there. You can be able to play all these old Call of Duties. See if that disrupts the amount of people that buy the new one. I don't know, but yeah. Like, I think there'll be Fable there. That'll be probably expected. That's probably out next year.
Yeah.
What else we got? Rare's not working on anything major, maybe a new thing from Sea of Thieves. But Everwild seems to be down for the count for a while. The Perfect Dark game seems to be in really bad shape from what people are saying, and that's not great for them. What? We got Obsidian with the Outer Worlds they're working on. The new one, Outer Worlds 2. That's probably hitting, but that's also a private division. It's not necessarily direct, you know, a fully Xbox game. But they got the other game Avowed that they're working on. That'll probably be out this year, I think. I think I was in that developer direct as being out this year. So there's that. Yeah, what else? The Indiana Jones game, we'll probably see more of that. Let's see. Yeah, I'm looking back at that direct, developer direct. Yeah, there's Aura History Untold. That'll be happening later this year. So that's neat. That's just a PC game. So not really one that gets the console people happy. But yeah, that makes for a weird time. But that's just kind of where Xbox is right now. They're in a very weird transition between what they were before the Activision acquisition and what they're going to be afterwards. That's required 2,000 people to get laid off at this point. That's a shitload of people. So we'll I think we'll end it there. I hope the next week is better. But yeah, thank you, Brandon, for joining this week. Thank you to people for listening. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know to check it out and select strangers who are also questioning Phil Spencer's entire existence.
Seriously, I'm pretty sure we could just replace him with an AI and the whole company would be better off for it.
So yeah, thank you all for listening. Hope you have a good week ahead, and we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.